Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the first half of the first season of Leverage Redemption. Now, we may also spoil aspects of the Leverage TV show, which ran for 5 seasons a good couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember exactly when that was. I think it's been 5 to 8 years since it went off the air.
Let's see. Leverage ran 2008 to 2012.
Okay. So, yeah. And then we've also talked about the Korean Leverage show. We even did an episode on one of the novels.
Yeah.
They did on Leverage. So definitely I was looking forward to this coming back. And it's by the same production company, Electric Entertainment, was
yes.
it? Yeah. Dean Devlin's company. The two guys who created the show were consulting producers, I think it were, and wrote, I think, the first two episodes, kind of the pilot two-parter. And it very much is, you know, in sync with the old show. It's got the same vibe, the same energy, the same fun.
Some of the social media posts announcing it was coming, the cast members were referring to it as Leverage the Continuation.
And I think that's a good way to put it, because the characters obviously have aged, things have happened in the intervening time, but they are the same characters with a logical kind of progression of the status quo, kind of as one might have expected given where the original show left off.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't feel that they reinvented anything or, you know, fixed anything that was broken, because there wasn't really anything broken.
Well, some of the stuff in those first two episodes that just cracked me up. You know, Hardison is saying, you know, they built a house for him and Parker, and I built Vincent for you to crawl around in.
Mm-hmm.
And she's bemoaning, yeah, but I know those vents.
Yeah, they're not strange vents.
They're not strange and dirty vents.
Yeah.
And then a couple episodes later, when Elliot's having to go through a vent and he's complaining about the dirt, and Parker's on comms going, but that's the best part.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, the people who wrote this show watched the original, were fans of the original, understood the original.
Yes. Yeah.
And weren't just, well, this is what they did, so we've got to ape that style or anything.
Well, and some of the callbacks were brilliant in terms of like what Hardison and to a degree Parker and Elliot are helping him with. But what they're doing now is not just what they had been doing, but they've set up what, and Elliot's like, is it really a side job or is it what Hardison should be doing full time? Because he's a hacker, but he's the only guy who does this other thing.
Well, let's talk about that, because where they left off, there was kind of the implication that they could take Leverage internationally with crews all over the place. And they've basically seemed to have done that. Not that we see any of the other crews, but they mention that that's what they've done. They've got other people. They help out where they can. But then in addition to that, Hardison has kind of started another aspect of either Leverage International or a separate thing. It was a little unclear which, where it's kind of a non-government organization that does good around the world. If an economy is about to collapse, they step in to prevent that. Mm-hmm. If there's famine, if there's, you know, other things that or social injustices or whatever, they take care of that. Well, and that's Hardison's kind of baby. So it's as much getting food where it's needed, making sure internet access is available.
I was going to say, yeah, if some humanitarian organization gets hit by ransomware and it's not like they can afford the tech experts to go after it, he fixes the problem for them. They're helping orphans in refugee camps and stuff. They're doing all the stuff that is a natural outgrowth of some of the one-off episodes that were in the original series.
Agreed. And it goes far beyond just hacking, thieving, and hitting type stuff. It goes towards, again, logistics and coordination and stuff that Hardison's really good at.
Yeah.
So he's in the field in the first two episodes, and then he's not in the rest of the eight episodes, which sucks. And it really hit home for me at the end of, I think it was the card game episode, where they're back at the base and his younger foster sister, who's kind of his stand-in here, is teaching the rest of the crew how to play this game.
Yeah.
And we've got this overhead shot where you've got Elliot, Parker, and Sophie, and then you've got Brianna and what's Wilson's first name?
Harry.
Harry. You know, the two newbies. You've got, it's like half the people in the show are new.
Yeah.
Even though it was kind of pitched, well, we've got one new guy and then the sister kind of filling in as needed. And Aldous Hodge is doing, what is it, City on a Hill, and might have one or two other things going. I mean, he's a reasonably busy guy, so the fact he was able to be in as much of this as he was, I appreciate.
Well, and he's, I think, currently filming the Black Adam movie.
That's right. He's going to be Hawkman over there. So he's in demand, and I think if he could have made this work where he could have been in the whole thing, he definitely would have. And I appreciate that his character is still active in the story, if not physically in the story.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because there are a lot of phone calls to him. And I do think that they faced COVID limitations in terms of, because they're filming during the pandemic, and lots of shows have pointed this out, it used to be that somebody could basically take a 3-day weekend from another production, fly in, film for a day or two, fly back to the other production.
Yeah, because doing those two episodes he was in could have accounted for a month when you factor in a 14-day quarantine.
Exactly. And that's part of the problem they're facing. You know, if they had had all of their scripts in it when they started filming, which I hope they did.
I'm thinking they did. I'm thinking they may have even already finished filming the later half.
But I guess the thing is, if they had wanted to do a Zoom call-in episode with Hardison, and when they had him for those two episodes, had filmed it, they could have. But the thing is, I'm afraid that would have undermined Brianna.
I think so. I think it was intentional not to do that, because in the one season that Sophie kind of sat out part of it and we got the other grifter, Tara, Sophie was, you know, doing the Zoom call kind of a thing. And I think it worked better for them in Redemption not to do that with Hardison.
Yeah.
You know, he's written some of the software that they're using. He's, you know, sent them a thing that kicks off, you know, the mid-season finale, if you will, here.
Yeah.
So his presence was felt without having to, you know, have him kind of phone it in.
Well, and the whole thing was, he did have confidence in Brianna. And there was a lot of building her confidence. And having Harry as the new guy, they got to poke fun at themselves and teach him how they do things. I mean, for the first few episodes, it's, you know, Sophie, you gotta say it.
Whenever you're doing this kind of revival of something, or really starting any kind of a story where you've got an established crew, you always want to have that new person to the crew to where they can be experiencing the stuff along with new viewers or readers or what have you, new audience members. So Harry was very much a, you know, why is how they phrase this a big deal? Why is it, okay, she's got to say this and walk off? Things that were hallmarks of how Nate Ford ran the team originally.
Yeah.
And he's like, I've just given up asking at this point.
Yes.
And having both him and Brianna there to do some of that in different ways kind of worked. You know, the two of them are kind of, I don't say outsiders at first, but, you know, definitely bringing in a new vibe and a new dynamic.
Well, and the one time that it's basically they tell their hacker everything has to be done analog. And she's like, that means there's nothing for me to hack.
I want to see them in the second half do something where she comes up against, you know, and they did a little of this with Hardison in the original, but tech that's older than they are.
Yes. Yes.
Which wouldn't be too much because Brianna is 16, 17?
That's what I thought at first. But no, she's 20 or 21. She said she remembered 9/11.
Ah, you're right. You're right. Yeah. She looks a little younger.
Yeah.
But she's more or less about the age Partisan was. So I want to see...
Well, they used her well in terms of her youth.
Mm-hmm.
Our mistakes don't define us.
Yeah.
We can move beyond our mistakes. And in that way, both she and Harry are on similar journeys.
Yes. Both of them are seeking a form of redemption. He is much more explicitly than hers. And I think at some point, some of her past is going to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to see on that, I want to see Nana.
Yes, so do I.
And I'm trying to think, who would be the right actress for that? And there's two names that came to my mind, one of which is definitely a, don't know they'd go there, but it'd be funny as hell if they could make it work. But the one I think is almost the logical one,
mm-hmm.
Felicia Rashad. The mom from Cosby. Yeah,
she was one of the ones that came to mind for me. The other one that came to mind for me was, I want to say she goes by CCH Pounder.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Uh-huh. I could see that. The one I was thinking, and it would be one that would be a more comedic take, but if they could hit just the right balance, could be both hilarious and really good. Vicki Lawrence.
Oh, yes.
From the Carol Burnett Show and Mama's Family.
Yeah.
And just play her as kind of the serial foster mom.
Mm-hmm.
And have a bunch of kids that she's, you know, currently got in-house or whatever.
Yeah.
You know? At some point, I would like to see the background for Hardison and Brianna that gives them kind of the moral code they've got, which is really interesting because they're clearly hackers and doing not good things, but often for the right reasons, even if initially it's a little, you know, self-serving.
Well, and I mean, Nana definitely is part of that in terms of when they called Nana and said, Brianna's here, do you know what's up? And her answer is, the FBI came to the house, she took down, you know, some social media site. And when Brianna fesses up to why she's there,
mm-hmm.
it's similar but slightly different take.
Well, I love the, I show up in Panama and you don't ask.
And they're looking at her like, we asked, just not you.
Yeah, yeah. They're doing some fun stuff. And again, I liked how, particularly in the both the pilot and the second part after it, they hit a lot of the familiar tunes and lines and such.
Oh, yeah. Age of the Geek.
Age of the Geek, Damn It Hardison, and other things that were just, you know, catchphrases and whatnot. And also, when they meet up at the grave site, we've got the overhead shot, we've got where they actually do, which is, I think, the first time they'd ever done it, the call off on their roles,
yeah.
And then just kind of walk or whatever. You know, it's very much... We've acknowledged the old show. We love the old show. We're continuing with the old show in a new way.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do because time has passed. The actors have changed. Society has changed.
Well, the one who plays Sophie did the trademark bits with her, quote, acting so beautifully.
I love how in this headquarters... which is a defunct bar that they kind of, you know, revitalize for their base, it has essentially a stage. And when she's walking up on the stage to tell, you know, here's part of the Mark's deal, and she's realizing she's on stage.
Yes, yes.
And that's something that if you've never watched the old show, it'd be okay, that's a little weird, but something happened, just like Harry would be feeling. But if you've watched the old show and you remember her introduction and how horrible she acted on stage.
Yes, yes.
And you're getting that vibe here and such. It's, again, a lot of fun. And
well, and then when she is going to read the sonnet
mm-hmm.
at the not quite Ren Fair, when she first gets out on stage and she's performing the sonnet so dramatically.
Yes.
And then Brianna whispers in her ear, wait, that's the key to the puzzle. And suddenly she's actually reading the sonnet.
It's part of the con now, and now she's selling it.
It's a beautiful performance to mm-hmm. the point that the guy who wrote it is just engrossed in the performance. And that was French Stewart.
And justifiably so.
Yes.
And I think
yes.
French Stewart did a great job in that role.
Yeah, he did.
And I also want to point out that Wilson, the new guy, the lawyer... is Noah Wiley,
mm-hmm.
who was in ER back in the day. He was in The Librarians, mm-hmm. which is another Dean Devlin show, which is where also Christian Kane was on. So those two know each other and such. So he fit in well without being, oh, he's just, you know, a replacement Nate Ford.
Yeah.
And I loved how at kind of the mid-season finale, they had a fake Nate.
Yes.
And when we finally got some of the, this is how he knows what he knows and who he is and all that, it's like, okay, that works. And just the actor they played didn't look at all like Nate Ford, but fit the basic generic kind of description. So tall, this kind of hair, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and when he had the revelation for how he thought he'd known everything,
mm-hmm.
but there was that huge detail that he'd
written a book on the crew and there was a gaping hole. And once he realized why there was a gaping hole.
Yeah.
And that whole thing was played beautifully throughout the whole story and was just a ton of fun. It did remind me of one of the things that I think there's two main questions with Wilson that I think they've got to address in the second half of the season.
I think I know one of them.
The obvious one is what's up with the daughter?
Yes.
Okay. Where is she? How old is she? What's going on there?
Yeah.
And I think we got to get some. But then the other is he was a lawyer. He and his team moved money, protected a lot of these bad people and stuff. This is the whole thing he's kind of seeking redemption for. Who led the team after him? Who is his...
Sterling.
Sterling.
Yeah.
Because Sterling was essentially the number two, you know, guy behind Nate Ford at the insurance company and filled that void when Nate left.
Yeah.
Or imploded and then left. So I want to see Sterling. I want to see his equivalent for Wilson.
It's my perverse sense of humor, but I want to see Nate's ex-wife because she and Sophie got along so well.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that we didn't see that. I definitely think we should. I also want to see Sterling's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to see her brought in by Wilson of this is somebody who I've used. She's an expert in this or whatever. And the minute she shows up at the base and sees the crew.
Yeah.
You know, again, there's a lot of potential there. Because there were a couple of times where Wilson knew people that he hadn't really fessed up he was going to know. And
yeah.
He was connected in a way, again, equivalent to how Nate kind of was at times.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the character replacements worked out well.
Yeah.
I didn't really miss Nate. I did miss Hardison.
I'll agree with that. But part of that is just Hardison was so full of life and personality that whenever he was on screen, it was just, I don't want to say unmissable, but you know what I mean? I mean, like there was one scene where it was so clear they were wishing Hardison was there. You have Parker pop out with, you know, this is a great time for the old Klingon expression.
Mm.
You know, and then Elliot is the one who translates it.
And he's like, ah, you know, Hardison bet me I couldn't learn the language. I won. And Brianna's like, did you?
Yes, yes. And Harry's just looking at them like, this is what this crew does.
Yeah. It makes for a very fun, almost family dynamic. And now we've just got some of the extended family almost.
Yes. Well, in the original series, we had the FBI agents we saw periodically. I expect this U.S. Marshal to come back.
Oh, if she doesn't, that's a mistake.
Yeah.
The U.S. Marshal, particularly the way she and Elliot interacted, has got to get played up more. I thought that it was sold well. It was a lot of fun. It was definitely hinted at that there's more to come on that.
Yeah.
So I was kind of wondering if that's going to be, again, their equivalent to Parker and Hardison posing as FBI, you know, recurringly.
Yeah.
That was one of the places I think there almost could have been a callback. The other one where I thought there could have been is in the finale when we had the Interpol. If there had just been a, you know, you work for Sterling, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, one good case, you could take his job. So they've, again, fun stuff.
Yeah.
The episodes ranged from, what, 43 minutes to 56 or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
streaming service, so they've got a little flexibility. They don't have to clock in at a particular time. But these all were basically normal length TV episodes. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little older school normal length than current, because I think current is around 42-43 minutes. Yeah.
Well plotted.
Yes.
I mean, starting with the first one where it's Too Many Rembrandts, I think was the title.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're talking...
Well, the Too Many Rembrandts job. It's always the whatever job.
Yes, yes. But I mean, just from the moment it's, okay, so we've got Fake the Painting and going through the intricacies of the ingredients, if you will, for the paint.
Well, I loved that scene because there was a callback to, I forget which one, where Hardison had to fake...
Like a book?
A book.
Yeah.
And it had been up all night, and it's like, okay, we've got to make it out of this. It's got to be the authentic stuff. And he'd just gone complete OCD on that.
Yeah.
And then here, where he's got essentially a 3D printer that can fabricate some of this if he's got the right materials. And he's like, I need, you know, from the 1660s, you know, the blue came from here, the yellow came from here, and the whatever came from wherever.
The red came from the lice on the cactus in Mexico.
And it's like, I got to go source these things. And Elliot's like, I got a guy over here who owes me a favor. I got a cabbie over here, and I got somebody over there.
A sniper in Afghanistan, yeah. I think it was. Yeah.
And it's like, for the canvas, you're on your own. And of course, they source it out of Nate's supplies in his work shed, which is clearly his home office where he had been continuing various investigations.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised we didn't go back to that location. I know they kind of written it in a way that they couldn't. But it feels like there needs to be something else Nate had had on the back burner.
Yeah, that I would agree show with up. That.
And I also expect Reed Diamond's character
yes.
to show back up.
Yeah.
Reed Diamond has a knack for playing just the scum of the earth type characters that have no redeeming qualities. He's played this sort of a thing in just the despicable type characters in numerous shows.
I kind of feel sorry for the guy. I mean, there used to be an actor, I think his name was John Dye, who played the Angel of Death on Touched by an Angel. And at the time, you know, his family was in L.A., but they filmed in Utah. So every Friday he flew back to L.A. Early every Monday he flew back to Utah. And he said he would get the funniest looks from people on the airplane. And it was like they didn't really realize they knew him from Touched by an Angel, but they knew they recognized him as someone you didn't want to fly with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I just keep thinking, poor Reed Diamond, how many people subconsciously and not really aware of it take one look at him and like, I don't know why, but I think I really shouldn't like you.
Yeah, yeah. I assume he's a nice fellow or whatever, but exactly. The types of people he plays.
Yeah.
I think the way Elliot would phrase it is eminently punchable.
Yes. I mean,
and the role he played here fit that to a T.
Oh, he was perfect.
And he did a brilliant job. This is a guy who is just unredeemable.
Yeah.
And unapologetically so.
Yeah.
And the fact that his story, you know, was in the one and then span into the second, bridge the two made a lot of sense of we've got to go after the guy, we don't leave loose ends.
Well, and they left him in a position where he is not just on the run from the authorities.
Mm-hmm. Well, he and another guy.
Yeah.
So there are two people from that story that, and they've already touched on the company the other guy worked for. If you remember them, don't you?
That was the security company that
that had the vault. Hired.
No, Sentinel something had the vault.
Oh, okay. I thought it was the same company that was the army.
Riz was going to leave something at the vault.
Okay.
But Sentinel something owned the vault.
There are a couple of people that could come back later as Remember Us?
Yeah.
So definitely some stuff set up for future things.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of characters that, you know, were from cases that happened between the two shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that definitely leaves an opening for more novels and things of that sort, or comic books or whatever, to either set those characters up or just what else happened in the intervening years.
Well, and in that first episode, one of the things I loved was when they get to that and here's what we did. It involves a, ta, little did they know, we have a team in each of those 8 cities that guy wishes we couldn't get at him in. Because when somebody says, yeah, you can't pull off crimes simultaneously in 8 different cities, we're that good.
I would like to have seen a little bit more of at least which cities they've got locations in. And they had a pair of card sharks in one episode. Did they fly in for this from another location? Or is it just somebody that had known Nate and Sophie? They kind of glossed that over. Yeah. I don't think we needed a full backstory, but a line or two more of dialogue might have helped.
Yeah.
And I definitely, since they've gone international, I definitely want to see the Korean crew kind of acknowledged.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the question is, A, will they get more than the one season?
Sure hope so.
Yeah, me too. But B, because so much of it was filmed in Portland, and quite a few of the actors were basically Portland locals who took on some of those recurring roles, because of COVID and the whole quarantines and the people weren't traveling, I can see where some of the recurring people didn't come down from Portland to New Orleans.
Or, again, the guy who played Sterling, Mark Shepard, might have been hard to get him to get the time to do a quarantine and get where he needed to be. So, yeah.
Yeah. But I'm wondering if in future episodes, can we get the guy who played Bonanno and a couple of those to just come back?
Or the FBI agents or...
Yeah.
There's only really a handful of kind of recurring characters, but it would be good to see what had happened with them.
I can see Bonanno and the FBI agents bringing them cases.
Yeah. Beyond that, Sterling and his daughter are the other two, and the ex-wife for Nate. I'm trying to think. Well, and Tara.
Yes.
Getting Jerry Ryan to kind of reprise that. Even if it's just she's now running one of the crews.
Which would be priceless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or she's going around checking on them or training something.
Yeah.
So definitely I think they've set a lot up. I think they expanded the kind of the franchise and stuff without this being, you know, like just focusing on some other team. It's another leverage crew and we get a guest star of a few of them and that's it. And, you know, new people from here. Getting the old gang back together was fun.
The girls episode,
which
I can't think of the title of. But one of the things I loved in that one was, I mean, Parker has progressed in her understandings of feelings and of people. But in that one, she showed the some people, when you tell them something, instead of acknowledging, oh, wow, that's the truth, they become further entrenched in what they believe.
It was interesting because out of all of them, I think that was the closest they did to a sequel episode on the psychic episode that had Luke Perry.
Yeah.
And most of these others are just episodes of the ilk they had done before, but this is the one, while it was not a direct sequel to that particular episode, had the callbacks, had the most allusions, and while it was also kind of a follow-up to the Girls' Night Out episode, because it was the guys are off elsewhere, and it's just the girls this time. So I like how they're, I don't want to say mixing and matching elements from past episodes, but drawing on inspiration and elements that worked before.
Well, but I liked how they set it up to where they had cameras everywhere. So from the moment they started their actual con and grift, they could have their, she didn't mean to become a client, but she did, up on the third floor watching. And somebody could be with her explaining, this is what they did to you at this point. This is what they did to you at this point.
It also reminds me of kind of the Rear Window episode they done with Parker alone at the bar at that one.
Yeah.
And it had kind of story elements from there, too.
Yeah.
Again, they had their bar decked out with cameras. Of course, they're going to have this one decked out with cameras. They just are.
Oh, I loved the whole part where one of the guys was supposed to be breaking into the power box. And Rihanna was like, no, I can't let him into that. Hardison would be mad.
Yeah. Yeah, Hardison will kill me.
Look at him. He's doing a horrible job. He doesn't deserve this.
What got me with that episode is I thought those guys were idiots. Because the basic plot is they needed to secure a location for an assassination. They didn't need to buy the location. They just needed to acquire it for the day.
They thought big.
They thought stupid.
Well, Well, but I loved when Brianna basically hit the magnet release that mm-hmm. let the guy into the electric box.
Well, the thing just shoots open in front of him. Yes. But smacks him in the face.
Yes.
It was some good stuff, but it just, the fact that they didn't need to go to those lengths to, again, acquire a location for a day.
Yeah.
If the leverage crew had been in the position of, we need these locations for the day, they'd have either bought it out claiming they were going to do a film, or they'd given them an all-expense-paid vacation somewhere, or they'd...
Yeah, the vacation is what popped into my head.
Yeah, because they'd done that probably literally a dozen times in the old show.
Yeah.
You know? So, I don't expect the bad guys to be smart. It's probably good that they're not, but... And some of it is they had played up how the rules have changed, and there's a lot more wrongdoing that you can get away with these days.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that, I felt we kind of sort of got. Some of it, though, felt like most of these guys were of the ilk they had dealt with before.
Well, but part of it was, well, like down in Panama, where the guy's going on and on about how I found a way to make it perfectly legal to mm-hmm. do all the things you, illegal things you want to do. You know, and that seemed to be kind of a theme for the bad guys. There's now a way to legally do what you want to do in the illegal shenanigans category. You just have to find the loopholes. You just have to find the lawyer.
Or change the rules to make it right.
Yeah.
Or make it allowable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there definitely, I think, is a commentary on society that they're making of, we're supposed to have rules to prevent wrongdoing, and now we're basically just putting guidelines and greasing the path for the wrongdoing, which is... a shame. It's also even worse a shame that it's probably accurate.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed what they did here. I'd seen a couple of stills from episodes that were not in this batch of eight.
Oh, interesting.
One with a particular guest star that we haven't seen yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking they've already filmed the other eight.
Makes sense.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to seeing those. I thought they did, again, a great job here. The only thing from the original that I felt was kind of not here that I missed, I really enjoyed the old theme music.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, Joseph DeLuca's doing the music here. It's good. But I thought almost that kind of jazzy kind of stuff mm-hmm. they'd done before really worked.
Yeah.
So, and at the end credits, they kind of sort of have something like it, but not quite.
Yeah.
And I can get, hey, this is a different show, so different music's okay. But if that's, I don't want to say the complaint, but the thing I'm missing. I mean, obviously, I'd like to see more Hardison, etc., more of the old familiar faces or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But given they filmed this during the pandemic, there was like zero signs of that.
There was one scene in the tower job, I think it was, where we're going through a construction site. And I noticed all of the construction workers that were extras were 6 to 8 feet apart. So we're walking through this large site, and there are big noticeable gaps between the guys in the background. And I'm like, so we've got our extras when we don't need a, quote, crowd scene, socially distancing.
Yeah, but even there, and when we had the kind of Renfest equivalent, it felt populated enough and... quote-unquote densely populated enough.
And what you can do with something like that is basically tell people you need couples, households.
Yeah, yeah.
For your extras.
Well, but there are other times where other shows have very clearly tried to do something where you need a crowd, but you don't have the crowd. So you've got this expo or festival that seems to have like 10 people?
Yeah.
You know, so I thought they sold things well there. I don't know what protocols they had in place, but it seemed to have worked.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell, I haven't heard of any delays on the production when it was filming, and it looks, you know, on par or better than what they had done before.
Mm-hmm. I think shooting in New Orleans was a good idea. I think mm-hmm. it worked for them.
I would have liked to have gotten a little better sense of the physical layout of their kind of headquarters.
Yeah.
I was a little confused by that. But I do think it made for a good venue in terms of both that location and New Orleans in general.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting a little bit more kind of globetrotting,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, we hit a few other cities, so it works. And I'm curious, if they do get another season, are they going to relocate or stay with the base they've got or what?
Yeah.
Because they were a little nomadic before.
Yeah, I'm curious if we'll ever see the house that Harrison built for him and Parker. Because I just expect that to be a hilarious house.
Yeah, yeah. I half expect it to be a warehouse.
Honestly, I would be, if I were the production people, I would be tempted to get a huge empty warehouse that you could build the, quote, house inside of. And have the secret passageways, the huge, ridiculously huge for no reason vents between rooms. I would have basically vault doors for some of the bedrooms.
Mm.
Just kind of the everything Parker needs to stay amused in the house between jobs.
The playroom is nothing but a series of bank vault type things with other bank vaults behind them or whatever.
Yeah.
Kind of every, you know, Mark Reeder, whatever it was, I forget what name they use for all the security safes and stuff like that in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn Reeder, which is, I think, two of the writers or whatever from the old show, which is...
That's fine.
But yeah, I would love to see what that house was, because you know it's got to be everything that would keep Parker amused and the ultimate kind of man cave for Hardison.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we haven't talked about the van or what served as the van.
The new generation of Lucille.
Yes.
Lucille in the old show was the van, because every show of this ilk, you've got the person in the van, in this case it was always Hardison, that's operating security, running the comms, all that kind of stuff. And it blew up a few times. Here, and I love the way it was introduced, of the meat wagons.
Yes.
The food trucks. Elliot corrected Parker. They've basically set up food trucks all over the place, both as a way to give people some jobs that are ex-military or whatever, kind of get them down the path that Elliot had been going. And Elliot, again, a foodie.
Yes.
So works for him. But also, that is their mobile, you know, van or whatever, mobile station, wherever they go in the world, because they've got they're in France at one point. Yeah, I had to drive this down from the south of France or whatever. And these things are typical food truck in the front half, but have a back half that's, I almost want to say cubicle size, but it's larger than that, you know, comm center.
Yeah.
Complete with a locker where you've got the hard hats and, you know, the overalls for the construction or maintenance type person or the IT person, or we're going to pose as FBI, CIA, you know, whatever. I thought that was a hilarious concept. I would half expected to see people eating a bit more.
Yeah.
And have Elliot complaining you're eating the profits. And it was the Brick and Basil?
Yeah, pizza.
Ah, how they fit a pizza oven in one of those. And they did reference a pizza oven.
Mm-hmm.
The physics of how they fit all of that into that truck, I'm still not sure of.
Neither am I.
But it was fun.
It was the food truck Escher built.
Yeah, yeah. I was expecting to see Elliot, frankly, doing a little bit more cooking than he did. I loved how, with the casino riverboat thing, the other security guy he worked for was this guy who could do these great...
Carrot cakes
or whatever.
Yeah.
And that was probably the angriest we saw Elliot in the whole show was when Parker had eaten the carrot cake for him.
Yes.
And again, a little bit of a callback to one of the old episodes where, you know, a Hardison had taken a sandwich. I mean, who does that?
Yep, yep. Well, and making a real-life friend out of someone they met on the job. Parker had done that at one point. Mm-hmm. Now,
yeah. And Elliot a few times.
Yeah. They bring home strays.
I actually would like to see at some point, you know, they've got this system that Hardison put together to go scrub people's identity that they're trying to hide and stuff like that. I'd like to see almost an offshoot of that where they've got something that flags if one of their kind of protected people is off the grid, doesn't check in, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, somebody they've helped before, they're kind of keeping an eye on, like guardian angels or some such.
That'd be cool.
And it feels very much like something they would do.
Yeah.
You know, if basically they wake up one morning and they get a ping on their phone and it's, let's go check on Bonanno.
Yeah.
He hasn't been seen for a day and a half or whatever. So another way to get stories into the funnel. And again, they had a couple of different ways here that were, one, they kind of stumble across when Parker sees the person getting run over. A couple that Wilson brings in. one or two that Hardison funneled to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, again, they're doing a good job. I think this is kind of sort of just a sixth season of the show.
Yeah.
But they've brought some new people in. It's got a little bit of a different dynamic because of that, but not in a bad way at all.
But it's the same fun it always was.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't reference the alternative revenue stream, but they're still making sure the money goes where it's needed and does the most good.
I would say that was the one comment or one line they didn't use in this that it was the alternate revenue stream of how are you funding this? Because now it's, again, they'd made a score on their original first job, and they've obviously continued to build on that, that now money is clearly not an issue. Never, I mean, kind of never was.
Yeah.
But to not get that line, I gotta say I was disappointed, but missed it.
Well, the final episode of the eight had several of the lines and then a fumble.
Yes. Yeah, again, the fake Nate brought in quite a few good things.
Well, and I loved the whole TV interview of him, of kind of a, and when you wrote this, you were so brave. Because obviously you considered,
yes.
And you were aware, and you understood.
It was very much, this guy probably doesn't know, if he doesn't know what he's gotten himself into, let's tell him.
Yes, and the dawning horror on yeah. his face.
And that actor did a really good job on all of that.
He did, yeah.
You know, that was one, in the wrong hands, that episode really could have sucked.
Yes.
You had somebody who was trying a little too hard to be Nate Ford or couldn't sell the I didn't realize what I'd gotten myself into even though I'm supposed to be the mastermind.
Yeah, Joey Slotnick.
Yeah. I think overall, a lot of the guest stars and people they brought in per episode did a really good job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of them were not major roles, but did well with what they had. A few of them, it's like, I want to see what they've done outside of this.
Yeah.
So
I think it's a great eight episodes. And I'm glad they went ahead and gave us eight. In
yeah.
terms of it was a good, easy-to-view number. And if they'd made me wait longer so I could have all 17, I'd have been impatient.
17 or 16?
I'm pretty sure 17.
Interesting.
I'll try to find out.
If it's 17, I almost would have gone for 6, 5, and 6 or something like that. And we marathoned 6 of them in one night and then these final two on a second go. So doing them where you could kind of marathon it all in one night
it
would have been nice.
It says, when it lists out the individual episodes, it says 16, but the page that sends you that says 17.
Hmm.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, we'll find out what we get when we get the other stuff later in the year. Definitely looking forward to it. Hopefully we'll get a little more Hardison, at least for the finale of that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, while I missed the actor and the character, narratively, it didn't leave a gaping hole because they filled those gaps fairly well. I think this writing crew is definitely on par with the original crew.
Yeah.
And are continuing the tradition. And out of all the revival shows I've seen, this is the one. And granted, having the original actors totally helps. Having some of the original directors, creators, etc. totally help. But this is the one that I think best captured what the original show was.
Mm-hmm.
Continued that as it should be and built on that as they could.
I think they do a great job with the applying leverage, but also with the keeping you with them as they're going along for the con and then getting to a point where you're playing along and you're like, okay, something's happening. We don't have all the pieces and you're trying to figure it out with the bad guy, basically. And then when you get the reveal, you're like, ah, that's what I should have seen.
There were a couple of episodes where they did this almost cliche bit in the old show of, we left a few things out, now we're going to give them to you.
Yeah.
Which at times got a little annoying in the old show, because it's like, come on, you're not playing fair. And they did that a few times here and didn't do that a few times here. And in both cases, I think it worked.
Yeah, I think they did really well with that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, one time here, it was simply flashback to a conversation and rethink what was said and the meaning of what was said.
Mm.
And the import of it.
Yes, yes.
Whereas another time, it's flashback, and it's like, well, wait, if you can do that with the 3D printer, could mm-hmm. you also do this with it?
Yeah, yeah. No, definitely there were a couple of things in that first episode where it's let's flash back and this is what we hadn't shown you.
Yeah.
But both it was times guessable. It worked. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious how this writing room kind of got up to speed on the show as a team and figured out where they wanted to go and how they wanted to get there.
Yeah.
Because it worked.
Well, and this first half of the season was kind of a mourning of Nate. He's been dead a year, and Sophie is coming out of the grieving, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious what the second half of the season will be for kind of a tying together arc in that sense.
Yeah, because it does feel that we're, I don't say we're past that, but we got a sense of closure on that.
We dealt with a lot of those emotions, and really well, for all the characters.
And that was one of the overall arcs for this first half. Starting Harry's redemption was one of them. Brianna's integration into the team was one of them.
Yeah.
I am curious what will be those kinds of arcs for the second half.
Yeah.
Definitely a good question. Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.